really hope we beat their ass today.
And I'm going to tell you what, the tortillas were flying.
This is the Air Raid Podcast presented by Viva the Matadors. You're hearing the voice of Jeremy Gillen. And while basketball has all of the momentum right now, we're not going to neglect these remaining football games throughout the season. As hard as it is just to come back to it, we have to. Namely, TCU at home this weekend under the lights, or the one light of the sun at least. So we're going to be interviewing Jamie Plunkett, who manages the very good Frogs of War blog. Jamie, how's it going?
You know, it's been better from a TCU football perspective, Jeremy, but thanks for having me on this week.
Absolutely. So I've got to ask, because personally, I want to know, and I know everybody who doesn't involve themselves with Frogs of War needs to know, but they're afraid to ask, like, why the name? Because I think of Frogs of War, I'm like, okay, I think a man of warship. Is there any correlation there?
It's a Shakespeare quote, let loose and cry the dogs of war. It originates from that Shakespeare line.
Okay, and is this something like the TCU generally has adopted?
Not really. So our site started, probably a decade ago now, a little longer ago than that. And the guy who started it, that was just kind of what he called it, and that was his inspiration for it. And you know, we've grown it and grown it over this last 10 years or so to what it is. Joined the SB Nation network early on in its life, and never looked back.
Dang, must have been an English major or something.
He must have been. He wrote a book at one point. So.
Oh, golly. Yeah, okay.
His name's Ezra, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I would probably never read that literature, and that's saying something because
it's
I'm
totally
a
fine.
Historian.
It's all about TCU, so it's not really.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm out.
No, not up your alley.
What a snooze. Not really. Well, at 4-5 and 2 wins in the conference, the Horned Frogs are in a similar kind of win or die scenario that the Red Raiders are. Man, how are things looking for TCU after that loss last weekend against Baylor? I know a lot of people, especially up here in Lubbock, were watching that game pretty closely. And you can bet that people around the Big 12 were watching that game because it seems like time and time and time again, Baylor just keeps escaping the inevitable loss. What's going on? Like, what's the mood around TCU with the rest of the season ahead?
Well, the outlook isn't significantly bleak, but it's not exactly great. You know, you look at the last 3 games on TCU's schedule, and it's y'all, Oklahoma in Norman, and then at home the day after Thanksgiving for West Virginia. And TCU has to win 2 of those games to be bowl eligible this season. And, you know, TCU's success in Lubbock has been limited since they've joined the Big 12, and against Texas Tech overall, it hasn't been where Frog fans hoped it would be. So that game doesn't look great coming up on Saturday, and then Frog fans have pretty much written off that game up in Norman 2 weeks from now. So it's a little bleak. There are big questions about how inconsistent this team has been and what the coaching staff is going to look like moving forward. 4 of TCU's 5 losses have been by a touchdown or less, though. And so it feels like the Frogs are just on the cusp of what could have been a really good season, but they haven't executed as well as they've needed to down the stretch to get some of those wins.
Truly, I think that's kind of a narrative for a couple of teams outside of Oklahoma. I know Texas Tech has a lot of close calls. TCU has a lot of close calls. Iowa State's had a lot of close calls. It's like we're like the conference that's almost good, or it's like good-ish. Mm-hmm. Never seems to be putting it all together at the same time. And as I can't remember, Lee Corso, somebody, people just don't take the Big 12 seriously. So maybe in these upcoming years. Right now, TCU opens up as a 3-point favorite in Lubbock, which always hurts. But a big part of that, I think, is because of this TCU defense, ranked 23rd in the nation at total defense and obviously the best in the Big 12. Can you just enlighten us to really who is and, you know, what is making this Horned Frog defense so stifling?
Well, it's been an interesting season for Patterson on defense because to TCU fans' standards, it has not been where it has been in the past. There have been some inconsistencies in personnel and just in allowing big plays to be made against them that has frustrated people over the course of this season. But I will say it is some of the younger guys on that side of the ball that have really stepped up and showed out this year. You've got a redshirt freshman, Ardarius Washington, who's leading the team in interceptions this season from his safety spot. He has been a revelation in the secondary for the Frogs this year, and he has pretty much usurped a senior for one of those starting roles at safety. You know, the Frogs run the 4-2-5, and so they've got an extra defensive back on the field, and Washington has basically won that job out now over Vernon Scott, although you'll see both of them playing on Saturday. And another guy is sophomore Trevon Morig, who is just incredible, also at the safety position. He's second on the team in interceptions. He's a big hitter. He's all over the place. He is a guy who TCU fans feel should really be in the conversation for one of the best safeties in the conference. Everybody hears about Caden Stearns and a couple other guys around the conference, but Trevon Morig is one of those guys who can really play up to that same level. At the linebacker position, you need to know Garrett Wallow. He's TCU's leading tackler, and not even by a little bit. He's probably on his way to being a Big 12 first team defensive player this season. He is all over the place. He flies to the ball. He's great in coverage. He's made plenty of plays behind the line of scrimmage too, so he's another guy to pay attention to as well, number 30, Garrett Wallow. And then Jeff Gladney, who Tech fans should probably remember from the last time that the TCU went out to Lubbock. He had the big pick six that really kind of sealed that victory for TCU, 97 yards, where he dropped the ball just before the goal line and ended up scooping it up in the end zone for a touchdown. He's a senior this year. He was, I can't remember who's a defensive back of the week last week for some college publication. I can't remember who, but those are a couple names to keep an eye on for TCU's defense, but they have been susceptible to the big play this year. They've seemed to tighten the screws in the last couple weeks, though.
Yeah, certainly, especially with that. I think with that Baylor game, we got to get a really good look at how great kind of TCU can be, because Baylor's, you know, while their offense is prolific some weeks, they've been pretty awful other weeks, but I think this was a week that they were good, but TCU's defense was better. With Texas Tech now decidedly keeping Jet Duffy at the helm in light of Alan Bowman's redshirting decision, Jamie, where are your favorite matchups? I mean, between this, it sounds like you guys are you're really good at least like the middle, like especially the short game, medium game, maybe getting better at the long game defense for pass defense. Where do you find this TCU strength, and are there any actual areas that you think Texas Tech might be able to exploit on Saturday?
Well, TCU, one of the weaknesses of TCU's defense this year has been pressure from the defensive line. The defensive ends coming into the Baylor game only had combined for 2.5 sacks all season. Nobody was really getting to the quarterback other than Ross Blacklock. O'Shawn Mathis, a redshirt freshman defensive end, is someone who everybody has really high hopes for, but he hasn't produced like we've expected this season. And so if Tech can give Jet Duffy time, he should be able to put the ball downfield a little bit and put Tech in position to score. I watched a little bit of the West Virginia game last week that y'all went up to Morgantown and took care of business against a really struggling Mountaineers team. And Duffy looked good. And if he can do some of those same things, you know, make those intermediate passes, get the ball out on time, and also, you know, lean on the running game, Tech shouldn't have too much of an issue moving the ball up and down the field. Getting into the red zone is a really big thing for Texas Tech. If you can get into the red zone, the likelihood is that you'll turn that into some points. TCU's secondary has struggled in the red zone this year, and going into 2 weeks ago, the Oklahoma State game, TCU was giving up, I believe it was 80% of times that opposing offenses were getting into the red zone, they were coming away with a touchdown. So not just getting the ball downfield, but getting the ball into the red zone has proven difficult to stop at that point for TCU's defense.
Wow. Well, I guess some positives just to kind of give note for you guys. One, we have a couple of running backs who are out. Tajon Henry, I don't know if he'll be playing. Armon Shine is out for the season with like 8 broken ribs, which is, I don't know how that happened.
How many do people even have?
That's a good
question.
That's
most of them, I think.
that's most of them. Certainly probably a big hit. And then Sir Roderick Thompson not looking as healthy as he has with an ankle injury. I don't know if we're going to be digging deep in our depth chart. So who knows? But I will pump up Jet Duffy for a second. That right now, I mean, he's the lead and D1, I believe he's the leading quarterback. He's like 147 consecutive passes without an interception, which if we think of Duffy a year ago, God, what a difference. And refreshing for him to step in after Bowman went down and just really fill this role out. I know a lot of people were worried about that, but he's come in and he's done his job. He hasn't wowed everybody, but he's done his job. And, I mean, honestly, for this season, that's all we can ask for. So, I mean, so nobody's doubting TCU's proficiency along the defensive side of the ball, but we are all paying attention to Patterson's concerns regarding the Horned Frogs' offensive production. And we'll transition to the offensive side of the ball after we take a short break for sponsorship so that I can continue to eat. Alrighty. Welcome back to the Air Raid Podcast presented by Viva the Matadors. Again, we've got Jamie Plunkett on the line with us from Frogs of War, and we're queuing up the offensive side of things for TCU's football team. I guess the best way to open this up really is just to get your side of things. I know that this is probably a large point of contention with TCU fans across the board. What are the highs? What are the lows of the TCU's offenses? I know you guys have gone through a number of quarterbacks. I saw Max Duggan last game. Actually looks pretty good despite, you know, the result. What's your expectation going forward, especially starting this weekend? I mean, answering the adversity of a loss like Baylor.
Yeah, a true freshman Max Duggan is the real deal, I think, when it comes to quarterback. He's been the starter since the third or fourth week of the season, kind of beating out Alex Delton, who was a grad transfer from Kansas State and is no longer with the team. He stepped away after the Oklahoma State game when he realized that he was then third on the depth chart, decided that it wasn't worth his time. Duggan is the guy, but he's a true freshman. And so you've seen some of his ability that he's flashed at times, and we saw some of that in the Baylor game and throughout a couple other games as well. But you've also seen some of the freshman mistakes, not getting the ball out on time, some of the interceptions that he's thrown. But the real thing to know about Duggan is that he's a gamer and he's incredibly tough. He has thrown for 13 touchdowns this year. He doesn't have the best accuracy yet, but he can take a hit. He's really good with his legs. He's got 365 rushing yards and 4 rushing touchdowns this year already. And he is going to do what he can to kind of will this offense forward. The problem, I think, really lies with play calling and offensive coordinator Sonny Cumbie. And Patterson has been seen on the sidelines really, really getting on Cumbie's case quite frequently this season. After a bad loss to SMU, Patterson actually made Cumbie available to the media, which is something that he never does with coordinators. He saw him screaming on the sideline against Oklahoma State and again against Baylor because the offense, frankly, has just been completely inconsistent. When you have two senior running backs like Darius Anderson and Shewo Olanolua, you shouldn't be struggling to get the ball in their hands. When you have a wide receiver like Jalen Reagor, who's arguably one of the most talented receivers in the country and is a likely first-round draft pick in the NFL draft next spring, you shouldn't be struggling to get the ball in his hands. And TCU has not been able to find any kind of consistency, especially in their passing game and especially getting Reagor the ball this season. He finished with one catch against Baylor for 8 yards. And some of that is a little bit on Duggan. He is working on his passing game and he is getting much better, but realistically the play calling has been a significant issue for the offense this season, and most Frog fans are hoping for a change at offensive coordinator once the offseason comes.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah.
Play calling aside, because I think Texas Tech fans, sans this West Virginia game, understandably, play calling makes all the difference. You can have all the you can have all the people, you can have all the right pieces in place, and guy, if you just call 100 screens in a row, it's not gonna work. That's kind of our thing now.
So brutal, man. Like, that's the same thing with us. It's screen pass after screen pass after screen pass. It's like, oh, let's run a reverse with Reagor to just get the ball in his hands. But it's either a screen, something behind the line of scrimmage, or pushing the ball like 30, 40 yards downfield. The intermediate passing game has just been completely absent for the offense this year, and that's where people are most frustrated, because when you've got guys like Reagor and Tay Barber and DeValence Hunt and a tight end like Pro Wells, who's leading the team in touchdown receptions, get them in space 10 or 15 yards down the field, set Max Duggan up for some success. But it's just – it's been completely lacking this season. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, and I think there's certainly a lot of room, in my opinion, for TCU fans to be optimistic about kind of the ceiling of the offense, especially going forward, which whether or not they want to reach that is up to them if this, you know, offensive coordinator change does happen. And it seems kind of inevitable, or there's at least writing on the wall. But ultimately, this is not a team dead in the water. Last weekend, Texas Tech played a team that was dead in the water, handling West Virginia and Morgantown. Jamie, does anything from Tech's like super high turnover rate defense give you pause going into this game?
Not really.
Let me clarify. Yeah, high turnover rate, obviously, but I do want to address that we are automatic when it comes to giving up the deep ball. And like you said, Duggan's getting more of a feel for himself. Do you think, like, just go ahead. Just give you your thoughts. Yeah. I'm not gonna lead you to the watering well here.
I wouldn't be shocked if TCU tried to continue to push the ball deep downfield. I mean, Rager's a burner, right? And he can get behind any secondary. And so hopefully Sonny Cumbie will draw up a game plan that includes a couple of attempts downfield to Rager and another burner, Tay Barber. I think everybody's okay with Duggan throwing interceptions at this point. So I'll reframe that. I'm not worried about Duggan turning the ball over, but I do expect him to turn the ball over, if that makes sense. Because if he's turning the ball over, that means they're at least taking risks. And for the first half of this season, TCU has really avoided trying to take any kind of risk with the football on offense. And I think that's one of the key things that's led to some of the inconsistency. But with a true freshman quarterback who reasonably we can assume is going to be the guy moving forward beyond this season, you've got to let him kind of feel things out at the collegiate level. And if he's not taking risks, if he's not pushing the ball downfield, if he's not throwing the ball into double coverage and making some of those mistakes that young quarterbacks make, he's not going to learn. And so I'm fine with him turning the ball over. He's thrown all except one of his interceptions in the last three games. And so they're starting to take some of those risks. I wouldn't be shocked if he threw a pick or two against Tech and Lubbock on Saturday, but that means that TCU's letting him get a feel for the offense, and that's okay.
I like that. If you're not throwing interceptions, you're not really taking risks. We talked about a couple of people, but who on the TCU offense does Texas Tech need to pay attention to? Because we're not stifling the offense maybe the same way Baylor did. So who are the guys that you think will come out on Saturday guns blazing, more or less?
I mean, the number one name to talk about is always going to be Jalen Rager, as long as he's on this team. He's the leading receiver again this year. He's got four touchdown catches, which is second on the team. He's got 462 receiving yards. Those numbers are down from his last two seasons as a Horned Frog, simply because of the play calling and some of Duggan's inconsistencies early in the season. Plus, you couple that with the fact that Alex Delton started the first few games and he can't throw to save his own life, and that'll affect wide receiver stats. But Jalen Rager is still an elite wide receiver. He is absolutely capable of beating anyone in one-on-one coverage and getting behind a secondary. So keep an eye on him. But another name to really pay attention to is Pro Wells. He's a sophomore tight end. TCU has really ignored the tight end position in the last few years, but he has come on and been an incredible asset from that spot, especially for a young quarterback. He leads the team with five touchdown catches. He seems to be that safety valve for Duggan more often than not. And so that's another guy in the receiving game to keep an eye on. And then Darius Anderson and Shewo Olanolua, two-headed running game monsters from both seniors. Both have been on this team for a long time, both with six rushing touchdowns on the season. Those guys are a couple other names to keep an eye on. The reality of the situation, though, is it's all up to how well Duggan plays and whether or not Cumbie is willing to allow this offense to open up.
Whew, Olanolua, I watched him run, and I thought, oh, man, we're going to have...
He's a truck, man. We're going to have some problems. 300,000 pounds. No, he's about 235. He's 6'3", 240 is what he's listed as on TCU's website.
Golly.
Everybody, when he was being recruited, you know, he's a four-star kid. Everybody was like, well, we need to turn him into a linebacker. Just let him roll out and smoke some people. And he refused. He's like, I'm a running back. And since then, he has just been plowing.
And how do you
people.
Say no to that? How do you say no to that guy?
Right?
I'm a
especially
running back.
They've drawn up a direct snap package to him, too, which we call the Wild Frog. And he is pretty much guaranteed if he takes a direct snap to get 2 or 3 yards. So you'll probably see that in a 3rd-and-1 situation or a goal line situation on Saturday if the Frogs get into one of those. Shewo just taking a direct snap and saying, it's going to take 6 of you to stop me, so let's see if you can do it.
I feel like that's just an advanced physics question somewhere deep in college math somewhere. It's like, hey, when Olalolu gets the ball, what kind of force do you need to stop him from getting 2 to 3 yards? And of course, like, nobody can solve it because
no, they can't.
Good grief. Yeah.
There was a game, I guess it was the Arkansas game in Fayetteville a year or two ago. Frogs had it on like the 7 or 8 in the red zone. He took a direct snap and he literally dragged 7 guys almost 10 yards all the way into the end zone.
Oh, great. Well, I think that we might get to relive that this Saturday. I don't know. We'll see.
One can only hope.
Well, yeah, hope one way or the other, depending on what side you are. Okay, so let's say, I mean, you guys got a lot of weapons. That's obvious. We've kind of talked about it. We talked about, you know, the utility of weapons pretty much comes down to if an offensive coordinator does his job or not. Let's assume he does. Let's assume Cumbie comes out with a good game plan. Let's assume everybody's firing on all cylinders. I mean, in what way could our defensive coordinator, also a Patterson, of course, be preparing to keep like Duggan and all those weapons out of this game? Like, what's our defense's best bet?
I think if you get pressure on Duggan, you know, TCU's without their right tackle, their senior right tackle, Lucas Niang. He opted for season-ending hip surgery right after the Texas game to get himself in better shape. He's another high-round projected guy in the NFL draft next year. And so the Frogs are with a sophomore now, David Balasami, at right tackle, and he struggled a little bit in the last two games. At left tackle, Anthony McKinney is a senior, but he has been inconsistent, and the interior of the line isn't as good as it's been in the years past. So TCU has seen teams sending some creative blitzes and getting some pressure on Duggan and really trying to force him to make quick decisions because, again, he's a true freshman. He's going to make a couple mistakes, especially in those kind of situations. And so I think that's Tech's best bet, is to keep the pressure on Duggan and force him to get rid of the ball quickly. He's shown to be a little less accurate in those situations. He's capable of scrambling, but getting pressure on him early and making him go with his first read, maybe picking a pass off or two, that's kind of the way to go for Tech's defense, I think, on Saturday.
Nice. Easy enough, right?
In theory.
Okay, so, well, I kind of just really leaned into my next question. I mean, if we're looking at this from a bird's eye view, what's your key matchup this weekend that will determine the outcome of this game? And if that was it, I challenge you to find the next one.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think the same thing can be said in reverse. You know, Jet Duffy is a good quarterback when he has time. He is proven to be less effective when he's under pressure, as good of a scrambler as he is. And so I would really hope to see TCU's defensive ends make some hay on Saturday. They've been inconsistent and really lacking all year. The Frogs might be without a senior in Shamik Blackshear end, and so true freshman Colt Ellison is probably going to get a lot of playing time too. So Colt Ellison and O'Shawn Mathis, if they can take advantage of Tech's tackles and get some pressure on Duffy, maybe disrupt the offense a little bit, then I like TCU's chance in the game.
All right, sounds good to me. Well, in addition to all the X's and O's and all that, how do you personally see things shaping out this weekend?
You know, this is it's a game between two teams who have young quarterbacks who maybe weren't expected to play a whole lot this season. Questions on offense, not the best defenses in the world, at least from, you know, TCU's fans' perspective, not as good as TCU should be. And Lubbock is a hard place to play. I haven't written my prediction down for Frogs of War yet, so I'm still kind of feeling that out. Wouldn't
this
be surprised. Is it? Maybe.
I won't judge you, but once we put it on the internet, it's all over. You know.
That's yeah. It's Viva's. It's in the hands of the Viva fans at that point. I would say that I wouldn't be shocked if TCU came away with a win, just because of how inconsistent Tech has been. But yeah, the flip side of that coin is that TCU has also been very inconsistent this year. So give me TCU 27, Texas Tech 24 in a game that both teams really try to lose pretty significantly, and one team eventually has to win.
wonderful. I love games that just push everybody in our fan base to basketball harder. I love that.
Cheez-It Bowl 2.0.
Oh, Christ.
Like, just some really head-scratching turnovers and some major questions about what the coordinators have been drinking before the game.
Golly. Would you like to switch coordinators, offensive coordinators? We'll just see what happens.
No. I think you know, TCU might have just a raffle for a fan play caller at some point, and people might be more happy with that than what Cumbie's done to this point.
I mean, why not? Why not at this point?
Yeah.
Okay, over-under on Gary Patterson turning beat red before the half. You think that's a probability?
If Cumbie is not ready for this game, he will scream at him. Perfect. And he tends to turn red when he screams. It's going to be cold, though, so he probably won't sweat as much as you're used to seeing him sweat. But, you know, Patterson is just always an animated guy on the sidelines. Most head coaches are. And he always likes to joke that, yeah, just because he's screaming doesn't mean he's necessarily mad. And that's been true if you're down there on the sidelines. He's coaching kids up, and he's just a naturally kind of loud, screamy person. But I wouldn't be shocked to see him turn red before halftime.
Amazing. Amazing. Cool. Is there anything else you think we should add to this?
How are Tech fans doing after whatever the heck that was at the end of the Kansas game a couple weeks ago?
You know, I think, and it's hard to tell. I got the fan pulse to kind of give me an idea, that confidence graphic stuff. It plummeted pretty quick because you lost to Kansas, and you don't come back from that, really. I think we've just, a piece of our soul has died, but mm-hmm. we've kind of left it behind. There was a pretty quick coping, but of course basketball is helping us move past that pretty quick. It's interesting because it came like, so the ending of that game, of course, you have the blocked field goal attempt, which would have really just sent it to overtime. I don't know why people thought that was like, we could have won if we blocked it. We're just going to take it to overtime. and we have one of our best players, or they said it was the best player. I mean, last year he won. He was on freshman. He was on the Big 12 first team as a freshman. Adrian Fry picks up the ball and, you know, starts running and then thinks that somebody's behind him. I never really got clarity on it, but of course, laterals are back to nobody. Looks like a complete buffoon. And, you know, credit to him. He does a lot on the field. And I'm sure in that moment he thought somebody was behind him, whatever. But boy, that riled a lot of people up. And a lot of people were like, well, we lost to Kansas, so we got to fire Wells. I was like, geez, this is a tough sport. We have
a
tough fan base.
It's a short leash for a first-year coach.
Oh, man. It's like, I can see it's been 10 years, you know, for Texas Tech fans. It's been 10 years of suffering through Tuberville, through the long experiment of Kingsbury. Then you got Wells. It's like coming in. I actually wrote an article at the beginning of the year saying that I think Wells has the most pressure as a first-year head coach in Tech history. And I think that's true. And I think that was kind of obvious when we lost to Kansas that people were like, you're out, dude. I'm packing your bags for you. I'm like, geez, okay.
Yeah. Well, we're just glad as TCU fans that we've passed the mantle of being the most recent team to lose to Kansas off to someone else.
Oh, that's right. You guys were.
I had forgot. Since we lost to them last year. But, you know, Matt Wells is a good coach. I don't know about all the character stuff that's come out this last week or so, but give him more of a chance than one season.
Oh, absolutely.
My advice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, lean into basketball for sure.
Oh yeah, hell yeah. Sphere ball school. Everything else we're good at, just not football.
Right.
But we'll see. Fans are coming back around. The West Virginia game brought up a lot of people back. How we play, it's always about how we play and not necessarily about the result. Like, we lost to Baylor, but the confidence just shot up because we fought to the bitter end. And people had, you know, the refs to blame it on, as they always do. But I think our fan base truly, really just appreciates effort. And, you know, if you're giving it all the whole time, that's all you can do. So I'm appreciative for that, but when they're mad, they're mad, and can't get around it. So
definitely not.
Yep. So I'm excited for next year when Kansas beats somebody else and everybody stops talking about how Tech lost to Kansas.
That's all you can do to cope at this point.
That's
all.
You just wait, man.
And just pray.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, I mean, if that's it, then that's going to about do it for us today. If you've enjoyed this interview with Jamie Plunkett, Frogs of War, you can be sure to like, subscribe, give us commentary. We love the feedback that we're getting. Also, follow Jamie on Twitter at Frog Preacher, which is an interesting handle. And you can also, of course, find previous and future episodes of the Air Raid Podcast on your favorite streaming medium. For Jamie and myself, stay wrecked, people.